From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. When President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump paid tribute on Tuesday to the 11 victims of the synagogue massacre in Pittsburgh, they were met by a mass protest. More than 1,000 protesters gathered outside the Tree of Life Synagogue, where a white man named Robert Bowers opened fire last Saturday. The protesters chanted, "Words matter," and "Trump, go home." As the presidential motorcade passed by, someone held a sign saying, "It's your fault." The synagogue shooting was the worst single attack on American Jews in the history of the country. Just minutes before he committed the massacre, the gunman posted a note to the right-wing social media outlet Gab that HIAS, the Jewish nonprofit that resettles refugees in the United States, quotes, "likes to bring invaders that kill our people." He added, "I cannot sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. Screw your optics. I'm going in." The timing of his actions are likely linked to Trump's whipping up of anti-immigrant hysteria against a caravan of refugees heading to the U.S. from Central America. Joining me now is Tali Ben-Daniel, Manager of Research and Education at the group Jewish Voice for Peace. Welcome to the program, Tali.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this particular horrific incident, this massacre, many have been pointing out is not that surprising, although it is, of course, shocking, because we've seen a rise in anti-Semitic incidents and hate crimes quite dramatically over the past year, over 2017, along with a rise, of course, in racist incidents against people of color in general. This should have been a predictable outcome of what politicians are saying, right?
I mean, I think as all of us in the U.S. who are horrified by what's happening, no one could have seen this coming, truly. Looking at the night of the election and the sort of month after the inauguration and the amount of protests that were unfolding, I immediately saw a shift in my communities where people were preparing for a rise in violence against people on the margins, against trans people, against queer people, against people of color, against Muslims, and against Jews. So it's hard to be in this world, in this United States, where such a thing is possible and such a thing has happened.
Now, tell us a little bit about your organization so that people understand the work that you do. Jewish Voice for Peace is a very prominent activist organization. I know of your work primarily through what you do on Palestinian rights, but give us a sense of the work that Jewish Voice for Peace does.
Yeah, we're a national organization, and we work for dignity and equality for everyone in the region, Palestine, Israel. We're a U.S.-based organization. We want to change U.S. policy to reflect our values, to reflect our values around international law and human rights. And in doing that work, we are also building an alternative American Jewish community we would like to build an institution that values human rights, international law, noticing all of the ways that support for the Israeli government is in almost all Jewish institutions, and working to shift that support.
Now, this shooter that massacred these 11 people at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh said that he wanted to kill Jews. He was very clear about his motivation. Now, of course, Donald Trump would turn around and say, "My grandchildren are Jewish. My daughter is a converted Jew. She's married a Jewish American. So how can I possibly be encouraging anti-Semitism?" How do you respond to that?
I think any form of bigotry and discrimination and any kind of structural oppression exists regardless whether one has personal friends or relationships with people who are in the targeted group. So you often hear, when discussing racism, people say things like, "Well, I have Black friends." And so I don't think having those personal relationships exempts any of us from fighting these forms of bigotry and discrimination. And part of what Donald Trump has done is talk about the United States and talk about the fear of the other and fear of immigrants and fear of refugees in ways that really resonate with white supremacists. And white supremacists have felt extremely empowered after his election and rallied around him while he was campaigning. So, you know, he might say that he's exempt from thinking about anti-Semitism because of his family. But I think most people can see that he's actually really stoking white supremacists and their hatred of Jewish people and their hatred of people of color.
Would you link what has happened to the other big news story that happened before this, which is the pipe bombing, the pipe bomber that was sending these suspicious packages to Trump's favored targets?
Absolutely. And I would also link it to the white supremacist who attempted to attack a black church earlier last week and ended up at a grocery store in Kentucky and shot two black people.
A story that has not gotten very much attention.
Yeah. And I think all three of those stories in my mind are connected because Donald Trump has been feeding this conspiracy theories and white supremacists who believe that immigrants, refugees, people of color, and Jews are some kind of threat against whiteness. And we saw this at Charlottesville when the chant was "Jews will not replace us," that there's a sense that equality means erasing white people, which is it's not a set of thinking that I can relate to on any level, but that is the sort of set of thinking that Donald Trump is feeding with his policies and his rhetoric.
Right after the Charlottesville gathering, at which, of course, one young woman, Heather Heyer, was killed by a white supremacist, he still couldn't bring himself to, in the clearest terms, denounce white supremacy, denounce Nazism, denounce these ideologies of hate. He had to say, well, there were very fine people on both sides. You know, it should be so utterly easy to denounce an ideology that is linked to genocide, and our president couldn't do that right away.
Yeah. And I think he's the way he speaks, he always gives himself a sense that the person listening to him is the one who's wrong, right? So his most recent tweets on the media saying that I never called the media the enemy of the people, I called the fake media the enemy of the people, I think is actually a really good example of the way he works, which is he'll say something that seems so abundantly clear, like he's sending an abundantly clear message that he is not going to condemn white supremacists, and then he's going to call people liars for calling him out and saying that he's not condemning white supremacists. So it's truly terrifying to be in this world with him as president.
And then we, of course, have the anti-immigrant sentiment that he's been whipping up against immigrants, primarily immigrants from Latin America, primarily Latinos, especially around the so-called the caravan of asylum seekers that's heading to the United States, that Trump has turned into a big issue. Given what Robert Bauer, the synagogue shooter, said on this right-wing social media website right before he committed this massacre, he basically said that that Jews were bringing in invading hordes of immigrants into the country. And he referred to HIAS, which is a very prominent Jewish nonprofit organization that works on refugee rights. That, in his mind, those two things were linked, that the Jewish Americans and immigrants were basically part of some invading force in the U.S., right?
Yes, which is a very old anti-Semitic trope, that there's some kind of conspiracy, Jewish conspiracy, that Jews control the government, that Jews, this is a, like especially in Europe, that there was this sense that Jews were bringing forces that were going to destabilize the society. So communism or socialism, or sometimes, you know, just these anti-Semitic tropes that basically see Jews as nameless, faceless forces that control the government and are responsible for everything bad in society, is a very, very old anti-Semitic story.
The organization HIAS, can you tell us a little bit about the work that it does? And it was quite telling that among the protesters outside the synagogue, people were holding up signs about, you know, linking white supremacy to anti-Semitism, linking anti-immigrant sentiment to anti-Semitism and white supremacy. You know, in the shooter's mind, they are linked. And so we should certainly link them, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, Judaism is an Abrahamic tradition, like Christianity, like Islam. And the prophet Abraham, one of the stories that was actually being read in the synagogue, Jews all over the world were reading the same Torah portion of the Torah, which is the Jewish holy book. Abraham displays hospitality to the stranger. It's a story where he's inviting strangers into his home, washing their feet, feeding them. And the lesson we're all supposed to take from that is that hospitality is a value in Judaism, and that we welcome the stranger in. We were once strangers, and therefore we welcome strangers in. And Hayas takes that value very seriously and is an organization that currently in the United States is working to help refugees get stable lives and resettle refugees that are brought in who are escaping truly terrifying conditions and trying to give them stable lives in the United States. So for these white supremacists, this is seen as a threat. And part of what I think, you know, what Trump was trying to do with the Muslim ban, was Trump was trying to do with his executive orders when he was first in office, his most recent announcement around birthright citizenship, all of that is about a fear of refugees, a fear of the stranger, which goes counter to Jewish values.
So all of this happening right before these elections, you have the suspicious packages or this pipe bomber targeting Trump's favorite targets. You've got the shooting in Kentucky of these two elderly African-Americans at a Kroger supermarket that could have been an even worse massacre because the shooter was trying to enter a church. And then apparently as he was leaving, said to another white person, "Whites don't kill whites." Then you have this horrific synagogue massacre, the worst anti-Semitic hate crime in U.S. history. You have news that Trump is deploying the military to greet this caravan of unarmed, you know, vulnerable families seeking asylum and promising to put them in tent cities and then wanting to renounce birthright citizenship. It's a very clear pattern. Yes. We are being told by our president that if you are not a white Christian heterosexual born in the U.S., you are not really welcome in the U.S. It's startling and shocking that in 2018, we have this happening.
Yeah. And I think it's also a lesson in, you know, there's elements. I mean, this country started as a settler colonial project. And I've been trying to really listen to indigenous folks in the U.S., saying that this is not actually that new in the United States. But at the same time, I do believe that it is not too late, and that we can change the course of history, and that we can create a world that is better for everyone.
What does Jewish Voice for Peace, your organization, recommend needs to happen? I was heartened to see protesters say very clearly to Trump, "You aren't welcome here. This is your fault. Your words have caused this." Because sometimes we've sort of held back. People have held back. You know, you hear some folks say, "Well, now is not the time for politics. Thoughts and prayers are, you know, these sort of vague sentiments are what you hear in the wake of a horrific killing." But there was a very strong protest presence in Pittsburgh this week.
Yeah, I think our organization is really trying to see the ways that people are showing up in solidarity with each other, that this is a devastating and horrifying attack on the Jewish community, but that the Jewish community is not alone, and that there are other, that now that everyone is under attack, we all have to fight back together. I was incredibly heartened by the message by the Muslim community in Pittsburgh that was raising money and offering security and offering safety to the Jewish community in Pittsburgh. I've received personally many messages from the non-Jews that I work with in my life and in the work who understand what it's like to be under attack and have been under attack in all kinds of ways. And I think that that's really the message I think we're really trying to share, is that true safety for our communities, it lies in solidarity with each other.
Right. You know, there is definitely strength in unity, and there's such a broad swath of people that Trump is trying to incite hate against. We are many, right? I mean, this is something that I think people may be forgetting. And of course, this is exactly what what some in the white Christian community fear, that they are, that they're losing power. And yet, of course, if you still look at indicators and studies and who holds political power in the U.S., it's pretty clear that there is an imbalance in the wrong direction.
Yeah. And that part of what anti-Semitism and racism and transphobia do is that they allow people to blame anything that's going on in their life or that they're seeing in their society that might be valid on the other, on people who are different from them, rather than on the real forces that are, you know, taking away people's jobs or whatnot.
I'm glad you brought up transphobia, because as I was listing the litany of linked issues, I failed to mention, of course, the Trump administration announcement that transgender Americans, they want to try to take away their Title IX rights and you know, other very, very clear attacks on transgender Americans. I mean, at some point, the hate is so broad and so wide that this is a losing battle for the white supremacists. So you and I are talking less than a week before the midterm elections. Some people are putting a lot of faith in the midterm elections. Others are saying you can't put all your eggs in that basket. What's your view on how people should approach these elections, given all of the political context coming before them?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think we should use all of the tools that we have. And this is one of the tools that we have. So we can vote, and that can be really, really powerful. And I'm hoping for good outcomes. And it won't be a solution to everything that's happening, because he will still be president after the elections. So for me, the key thing is to organize with each other, to reach out to each other, to build coalitions between all of these groups that are under attack, and to hold our elected officials accountable.
Now, Trump, of course, has been very upset about the fact that these, you know, the pipe bombing issue, and he hasn't quite said it about the synagogue shooting yet, but he's sort of treated them as political inconveniences, that it's terrible that the, you know, you had this great momentum of Republicans voting, and then this pipe bomber, he tweeted something to that effect, is now hampering the momentum of conservatives at the polls. It's so sad to even, you know, he just seems incapable of showing empathy and acting like a leader in any way. So he's kind of inconvenienced by some of these hateful actions that might be hampering the votes of conservatives. What do you think the opposition party should be doing, Tali, and even Republicans for that matter? Trump is one person. Are you seeing other leaders, even in the Republican Party, disavowing this and saying, we don't want any part of this?
You know, I think my focus is actually on the people who have been fighting back. So I think, again, like, we need all the tools that we can, and there's a number of great people running for office. But I think that the thing that I'm really focused on is looking at the ways that people are organizing together and providing support and care for each other. Because there's only so much, for in my view, there's only so much a candidate can do for office. What really matters, what I've come to realize is what really matters is showing that the people aren't here for what Trump is putting out into the world. And I really think that that can have an impact because say you're a congressperson in a Republican state and you're a Republican, you really need the people, your constituency, to show up and show you that they're against what's happening and that they're against what Trump is standing for in order for you to be able to speak back, right? So we tend to think of these elected officials as the ones with power, and I believe that we're actually the ones with power and that we have to show our power.
Now, of course, what happened at the synagogue was also a mass shooting. And so the issue of gun control is very much part of this. We didn't quite get to that. In the statement that Jewish Voice for Peace put out, you said, "We reject the calls for more armed security, just as we reject the manipulative pro-gun propaganda." Are you seeing this issue being linked enough to the proliferation of guns? Because, you know, you're going to have people like Robert Bowers. As long as there are Trumps, as long as there are Robert Bowers, there are going to be attempts at massacres. And when there's an easy availability of guns, their hatred becomes so much deadlier.
Yeah. I personally do see a connection. And I also think that part of what happens when incidents like this happen is that people really retreat into a kind of violent form of security, right? So they think we need to build bigger security systems. We need to have more armed guards. We need to have more walls around our properties. And I believe that that's not the way forward, that that's just going to perpetuate more violence. And I'm not trying to be Pollyanna-ish about this. We're in the wake of an incredibly devastating massacre. So I'm not saying that, you know, that this violence doesn't occur, because it does. What I'm saying is that I think it's important to think about and try to create a world that's better than the one that we have. And I think going towards more guns is not the way to do that.
And then finally, you also posted in your statement, "We are not fooled by the Israeli government's sudden concern for a diaspora it regularly disdains. We remember and condemn its abuse of Palestinians, refugees, and asylum seekers, and we refute its false promise of safety through militarism." You and I started talking in our conversation about the work that Jewish Voice for Peace does on Palestinian rights. How important is it for you to raise the Israeli government's actions in this?
I mean, I think what's important to us is to think about the ways that certain Israeli representatives of the Israeli government are trying to speak for worldwide Jewish people worldwide, and that we don't agree with the way that they're speaking for Jewish people worldwide. The fact that there's a minister of the diaspora, Naftali Bennett, who went to Pittsburgh and was the sort of first person to greet Trump, to me symbolizes the way that the Israeli government is trying to speak for Jewish communities in the United States. And so many Jewish people disagree with the way that the Israeli government is treating Palestinians, is treating African refugees, is treating its own citizens. So it's really important that after such a tragedy, that we really hear from the people most impacted. And over the last few years, the Israeli government has made it abundantly clear that it's not interested really in the well-being of Jews in the United States. So there's lots of different ways that we can see this. One is the ways that the sort of more right-wing Jewish religious authority in Israel doesn't recognize the different forms that Jewishness takes in the United States. So there's many different branches of Judaism, denominations of Judaism in the United States. There's conservative and reform and reconstructionist, and none of those are recognized by the Israeli government. And there's other examples as well. So for us, it's really important to make sure that when we're fighting anti-Semitism, that we're not confusing the Israeli government for the Jewish people.
Absolutely. Well, Tali, give out a website for Jewish Voice for Peace.
Yeah, you can reach us at jewishvoiceforpeace.org or jvp.org.
We'll link to that from our website. Thank you so much, Tali. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Tali Ben-Daniel is Manager of Research and Education at Jewish Voice for Peace. We've been discussing the synagogue shooting and other hate crimes linked to Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.